Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Scav.
I want to let the audience know, you know, Scav and I, we've worked together. We share information back and forth.
I run Scout as my service dog. He's a hearing dog, PTSD dog.
We're here to bring you news, interviews, and information about service dogs and about matters that are of interest to the service dog community.
Thank you for joining us on the Service Dog Show on DV Radio, WDVR.
And welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, PTS Dog, also known as Joaquin Watai.
And I'm your host, Scav.
We are starting the third in our series on requesting reasonable accommodation. We discussed when to request reasonable accommodation when looking for employment, when you're applying for a job. And the answer was take the dog in with you when you pick up the application. The next show was how to go about requesting reasonable accommodation when you are already employed and have been dealing with your disability for a while and things have gotten to the point where you've decided that a service dog is the best route, and then how you go about informing your company that, one, you're disabled, and two, that you need a service dog. This episode is not about employment. Although we may get into a little bit of that, we'd like to welcome Nia Pinheiro, who is not only a disabled handler of a service dog, but also a landlord. Nia, thank you so much for joining us.
JJ, thanks for having me. I'm really honored to be here today.
Well, the reason I brought you on is because it's unreal, and you know this because you also run a Facebook group for service dog handlers, and the amount of misinformation out there about reasonable accommodation for housing is shocking, because it's a simple Google search and you can find the actual law. It's not that hard. And I know that you combat this in your group regularly. I see it in my groups, Gav. I'm sure you see it on your page.
Oh,
somebody
yeah.
coming in there who knows everything and starts dropping grossly inaccurate information.
That is a very common problem in our community right now, is misinformation, especially about any accommodation, whether it's housing, employment, mm-hmm. Public. So yeah, we do see it. And it's something that we have to combat regularly, or else our community members are getting into situations where they're struggling even more on top of being a handler, on top of being disabled. That information gets them into some pickles sometimes.
You know? Yeah, I agree. So like I said a little bit in the intro, not only are you a handler of a service dog, but you're a landlord. I just, without, you know, of course, giving your company name or anything like that, I get the impression it's a fairly large company.
We have about 500 doors just under between apartments and single family homes.
Wow.
We are a family operated, which is a little bit different than your large property management companies, but we do operate like those large property management companies. So some of the things, regulations that apply to, say, a broker may not apply to a family-owned and operated property management. So I do have a lot of toes in a lot of areas that do affect service dog handlers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a landlord has to have so many units to be applicable to FHA. There's a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the landlord and the situation, on whether or not they're even beholden to the FHA.
Right. So just for the audience's just for the audience's sake, we want to make it very clear. The Americans with Disabilities Act does not regulate housing at all.
No.
Fair but Housing does, Act.
Yes, but it does affect property management.
Okay.
Okay. And I think I can explain that a little bit.
Yeah, please.
Further. But so basically, Fair Housing Act is for housing. Mm-hmm. ADA does play a small part in the housing world, especially if you're at an apartment community and you have a service dog and you're visiting somebody at their apartment, you are ADA.
Okay.
Okay.
So I've actually run into this. I was visiting my brother in Bakersfield, California. And of course, Skeeter's not a small dog. And the property manager or somebody who worked for the property manager happened to have been on the property and saw a Skeeter and said, our size limit is 30 pounds. You can't have that dog here. And once I explained that not only was he my service dog, but I was just visiting for 3 days, she was okay. But I thought that was interesting. And I didn't know that. I didn't say, well, according to the ADA, because I didn't realize it applied. Thankfully, she was a reasonable person.
Yes. And, you know, I actually, that's a difficult one. I'm going to put my property management hat on for a second and kind of play, you know, walk you through that. But when you have a guest who has a service dog, it's hard to tell, right? You don't know if that's a pet. A lot of properties have breed restrictions and, you know, the list goes on into all kinds of restrictions regarding the animals. So if you're visiting with your service dog, that property management should ask only those two questions that you would expect in any other public forum. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were visiting and stayed long enough to be considered a resident, okay, then FHA kicks in. But if you're just visiting the office, if you're just visiting your friend who's living there, and you get approached, you would treat it like you would any other public access issue.
Which, on the side of the property manager, they may not be aware of either.
No, actually, I learned that one the hard way myself. back in the day, this is actually before I was even disabled, we had a gentleman, his daughter visited. She was there for quite some time. It was summer, you know, she was from out of state. They didn't notify us. We just assumed there was an unauthorized dog. They gave her a 10-day, and then a couple of days later, I got a call from, we have an organization here, and I can't remember the name, but they're more of a, they're kind of an advocacy group. They filed a complaint, but the complaint was kicked back to this organization that is like a liaison to try and help landlord and resident come to terms with an issue. And that's when I learned about the ADA being applicable, because I'm FHA, right?
Yeah.
That's the first time I had personal experience with ADA / you know, FHA kind of muddied up in there, because I'm thinking, hey, you know, that can't be a service dog. Now I do want to point out that we're talking ADA, and if you're visiting with your ESA, you're not protected. It is for service dogs. When you're visiting your friend to be protected, it's still ADA, right? So you do need to have your task trained service dog.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that one up, because there's going to be a lot of confusion on that.
Right. So, and that's for me, when that resident and I began talking, she kept referring it to an emotional support animal, but she was a visitor, so she left. We, you know, it ended amicably, and that's, but it was a learning experience to find out those are large differences, you know, people and property management companies are getting better about understanding that they do have some ADA culpability and responsibility, and hopefully it's improving, although it's slow going.
Well, and I think anywhere in the arena of understanding accessibility, it is slow going, because in my experience, a large percentage of handlers don't even understand the law and what their rights are or what their responsibilities are. I mean, it's shocking, to see how many handlers still think that a piece of paper that a training organization gave them has any legal weight whatsoever.
Yeah, and you know, guys, there's nobody out there really. I don't know about you guys, but when I became disabled and I decided to use a dog, it's not like somebody said, hey, take this class or, hey, you know, here's a manual. It's kind of like parenting. You just like, huh.
You weren't in the class that JJ and I were in? That's how I met him, their Service Dog 101.
Yeah.
Right?
I created the resource because there were no resources. Right? I literally wrote the book because I was looking and going, well, where do I learn all of this? And the answer is, Google foo, young master. Get your Google on. And I'm like, man, I'm telling you right now, I know 30 guys who you say, well, just Google it, and they will tell you to go pound sand, you know? Oh. So, I mean, I was like, there's got to be a way to make this easier for veterans, because I'm telling you, they're not going to Google it. So I wrote the book, which makes it easier for veterans.
An awesome book. You know, I'm a total fangirl. Love it. I use it all the time, but but that's true. And if I may just take a moment, when I became disabled, I had my FHA class under my belt. As a matter of fact, I had kind of trained Luna originally to help me with my daughter's mobility. So even before I was disabled, I had some exposure, and I still struggled with correct information. Once I became disabled and fully immersed in the community to try to satisfy my needs. And I probably have some trauma from some of the earlier service dog groups that I got involved with because of bad information. So I'm really glad you guys are doing the show to continue spreading that word, because you don't get a manual. And as a landlord, we could take workshops, but the workshops are, you know, the longer I'm in this community and I work and do awareness, I find that people know, but they know their piece of it.
Right.
If they know it at all. Okay.
Right. Right.
And everybody, including the handlers, the landlords, the doc, everybody is like in a vacuum. And these civil rights, these laws that grant us these
grant us protection.
Yeah.
But the law does not grant us the right. It grants us the protection.
The protections, correct. So, you know, as a landlord, I was taught how to cover my ass within the FHA.
Uh-huh.
That's the truth.
Yeah, I believe it.
Doctors, I don't even know if they get any education. I speak to therapists and doctors. I'm trying to get into that community more because I think they're probably surpassing landlords in misinformation and
mishandling
of patients, right?
Especially VA doctors.
Yeah. So, I mean, out of all the stakeholders that you normally would, you know, interact with in terms of service dogs specifically, only the landlords are being educated, and they're being educated by lawyers, mind you.
You know, in order to cover their asses so they don't get sued.
And I'll tell you, I was, you know, my family's been doing property management since the mid-80s, so we've been around a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so before, and I can't remember, I think it was 2003, is that when they added dogs specifically and mini horses? But there was a period where you would never see service animals, like even requests for accommodation. It was rare, two or three a year. Uh-huh. And literally overnight, and it's, you know, social media, it started, you know, catching wind. People know, oh, I have a right. They don't really know all the responsibilities all the time, but they know they have this protection now. Uh-huh. And we went from seeing like three requests for accommodation to 30 a month.
Wow.
And nobody prepared us for it. And I'm talking from a, you know, an operational standpoint.
Yeah.
As a landlord, this is well before I became disabled, but just kind of give an idea, because sometimes I think there's these preconceived notions about landlords. There are a lot of awful ones. There's a lot of awful anything out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, a little bit of devil's advocate. When we started seeing all these requests, we're like, WTF. And of course, we're getting the registrations offline like popcorn.
Yeah. You know?
And I'm sitting here with my lawyers going, yo, this gynecologist just gave my resident a prescription for depression. And I was like, my eyebrow hit the ceiling. Of course, I'm ignorant, right? I don't know that that's okay, right? But in the early days, there was little to no guidance to the industry other than the lawyers cover your, you know, CYA.
Okay. Right.
Now, I think now as it's more commonplace, the FHA at HUD is doing a much better job of with their housing workshops. Mm-hmm. People like us are out there, you know, sharing positive information. But there was no real coordinated effort to make service dogs more normalized in our society. And it's been very trial and error. Yeah. And when you have a bunch of people just trying to survive with very little information and they just know they can have their dog now, that's just like a recipe for a lot of disaster.
I wholeheartedly agree. And we'll get into that a little bit more later in the show. Right now, I want to stay focused on housing. So the first point that we need to make sure that people understand is if you are a resident, you fall under the Fair Housing Act, the FHA. If you are visiting a resident, you fall under the ADA. In other words, that law still applies and you are allowed to go anywhere in that housing complex, including your friend's house or apartment, that the general public could go if they were coming to visit.
That is correct.
And that includes on the pool deck.
Yes.
That, mm-hmm. I mean, that is 100%. I mean, it is the ADA applies, period.
Correct.
Okay. So the next question is, I want to move. I need a new place and I use a service dog. What do I do? I go to apply. How do I say, well, I use a service dog. Hey, when I go pick up the application, should I have my service dog with me?
You know, it depends. I'm going to give a generic recommendation because everybody's disability is different. And so there's no one answer. I can't say, hey, don't take your dog. Okay. Uh-huh. But I will say this, people are people. Okay. And we live in a society where preconceived notions, no matter how hard people try, could affect somebody's ability to feel comfortable on whether or not they were discriminated against. So my recommendation is if you can go without your dog or you can do virtual tours or I don't recommend taking the dog. I don't recommend that because I don't know if that person's got some negative ideals. I don't know if that person has their own, negative or misinformation about my service dog. So right off the bat, that may or may not affect. But some people, they have to go. So you got to go. Mm-hmm. But what I always tell people is that is not your pet. Don't put it on your application. Mm-hmm. If you don't need to take your dog, don't. Why do I recommend that? Because look, people are people. And if you want 100% assurances that no decision was made influenced by the fact that you have a disability and that you need an animal as medical equipment, then some people need that assurance. Okay. Mm-hmm. I always recommend apply, get your approval first. If you do have pets, you must disclose them on the application, but do not disclose any assistance animal on your application. That's equivalent to listing that you have a wheelchair on your application. So you wouldn't do that. Some people have concern. Well, is that being dishonest? No, it's not. That's being truthful. And again, it allows a judgment-free process while you're waiting for your approval. Now, once you have approval and get it in writing always, then put in your reasonable accommodation. And I always recommend doing that before you sign anything. And here's why. If they approved you in writing and you showed up with your accommodation and your dog now, and they deny you, what are you going to think? Well, I, what would I think? Now you have a clear proof that something other than that your application influenced them to change their approval. And it does happen. Mm-hmm. So now if somebody wanted to go through the complaint process and litigate that and go to HUD and file their discrimination suit, you have a clear line of action that is suspect. Okay.
Okay.
The other thing too is if you didn't sign a lease and they start doing kind of, you know, shady things like that, mm-hmm. you don't have to live with that landlord. You still yeah. have options. Because once you sign the contract, regardless, not everybody can handle litigation. Not everybody can handle the stress of arguing with a landlord who's going to try and deny. And by doing it in that order, not just the handler will have assurances that the process was judgment-free, wasn't based on that animal, but that landlord also has that freedom too. Like everything's done in such a way that they protect themselves as well. And that's just my opinion. Now, I've been criticized before about recommending that, but I always have this caveat whenever I make recommendations is not one solution's not going to fit all. Of mm-hmm. course, everybody's going to have their own circumstances. And if you have specific ones, I always say reach out to us and we can discuss them. But in general, that's my recommendation, hands down.
Okay, and that's a little bit different than the conclusions we came to when we were talking about employment. I understand what you're saying. Now, I will say from my point of view, I'm not going in without – that's just –
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Mine are playing too. They're going nuts. You've heard them a couple of times. Me personally, I'm not going to walk into anywhere without Skeeter. And right. my expectation would be, hey, you know, I'm looking for an apartment. And they would go, was that a service dog? And then I'd say, yeah, he sure is, as a matter of fact. And I will be requesting reasonable accommodation. But that's me. Right. I don't go. You know, there are two places I don't take Skeeter. Three places I don't take Skeeter. X-ray. The liquor store, because his tail could cost me thousands. And when I go get gas and run into the gas station for a cup of coffee, I usually don't need him. Now, there have been occasions when a gas station was crowded in a strange city where I was like, I'm not going in there without my dog. But most of the time, I don't. Simply because it's narrow. I mean, it's tight. If you couldn't roll through there easily with a wheelchair, think about moving through with a 100-pound dog. You know? But that is my personal preference in the matter is that if they're going to fight, if they're going to automatically immediately start trying to push back against him when I walk in to get an application, then I'm going to look for a different apartment. You know, it really is. Unless that is the only place in town that I can afford, so I'm going to fight him tooth and nail, I'll look for somewhere else. Because if they're going to give me grief when I go in to get an application, when else are they going to give me grief?
Well, and here's the thing, and that's why I say I with the caveat, right? Because everybody's going to be different. Me, I'm like you. It's like, hey, take me as I am, or don't take me at all, right?
Yeah.
But as somebody in the industry, there's a reason why I make that recommendation. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of ignorant people out there. There's still a lot of, you know, in this industry, everybody's supposed to know about FHA, right? But usually it's the managers and above that are going to these, getting this education if they're getting it at all. And they're getting it in these online classes. And when you walk in, they may be peaches, but there's a lot of back-end process that goes on. They're going to run your app. They're going to, you know, depending on the company, there could be two or three levels of approval. And the reason that I offer that as an alternative is because some people don't feel comfortable doing like you walking in. And I've had a couple of my members have lots of angst over, well, I didn't get approved, and that non-approval because they brought their dog in or because they listed their dog, or in their minds, it created that constant worry that, oh, I was discriminated against with little proof that that's what happened. So
right. And at that,
that recommendation is because it offers, if they change it, then you have a clear form of proof. If
right.
Otherwise it's going to be, as somebody who litigates every month, It always comes down to proof, even with discrimination, right? You've got to prove that those things happened, and it's really hard to prove if you don't have that.
And I totally get that. I do totally get that. That does make sense. Coming from the point of view of a landlord, of the person who would be doing the denial, that absolutely does make sense that this is the way you, the customer, can cover your ass. I get it. I do get that. I don't think that that's necessarily the fairest way to go about it, but I understand what you're saying. I totally do. So basically what you're saying is, look, from the point of view of a landlord, if you want to make sure that you're not being discriminated against, or if you want to be certain you are, here's how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't mention the dog until after, you know, they say, yeah, we will rent to you, and then say, I need to request reasonable accommodation. That makes sense.
And that's, again, for those people that want those assurances, that need to know, you know, for sure. I'm certainly not advocating that that's the only way, or that that should be the way, because those are personal things, you know. I just know that litigating a discrimination suit is extremely difficult. It's extremely taxing, especially for those of us who are disabled, you know, have psychological injury or TBIs or PTSD. So that's why it's simply just one way of doing it.
Yeah. I understand. And again, look, the reason we're doing this show is because here we have you who is both a handler and a landlord, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. So I appreciate that you're very clear in saying, this is the way I recommend it but you do it how is best for you. I really appreciate that. Because there is, I mean, you know what? Look, I'm going to walk in with Skeeter no matter what. And if they're going to look at Skeeter and say, no, we can't rent to you, I'm not going to try to sue them. I'm going to go to the next apartment complex. Because guess what? If they're going to give me grief right then and there, then how bad is it going to be living? I've been in an adverse situation where the landlord was, you know, didn't like me and did everything that they could to be as miserable as possible to me. And I don't need that kind of grief, you know? I've got enough to deal with a disability without having to deal with that nonsense.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah. You got to look at the area too. Like she said, you know, here in my area, you're going to have a bunch of rednecks and country boys, and it may or may not be an issue, but you get into some of the cities where you get a lot of immigration and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have, like DB Nightmare said, you're going to have certain kind of culture that looks down on dogs. And
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Then and you'll never get a dog to go into that house if you show up with a dog.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, and here's the thing for, you know, playing devil's advocate as a landlord, animals create a lot of damage. And that's what these, you know, a lot of people and, you know, being disabled now and just being immersed in the community, I try and, you know, spread that awareness to that industry. And I can tell you, it's pretty difficult to break through people's conditioned stigmas against people with disabilities. And it's not just the dogs, right. You know.
Or you could have had that one bad apple that left a scar on a landlord. You know, one dog destroyed his apartment. So now he's, you know, a bigot towards all dogs.
And that happens. You know, I mean, we had one apartment down for 2 years because the lady had like 30 cats in there.
Oh my goodness.
And it took 2 years of treatment too. So animals, and that's of course extreme. So
yeah, that is,
that's do that or, but those are the stories that kind of get, it's kind of like the peacocks. They get exaggerated. They get, people start fearing things based on what? Misinformation.
Right. Yeah. But she was without money for 2 years on an apartment because of one person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And that's where we're going to pick up after the break. But we do have to take a quick break. You are listening to the Service Dog Show right here on DV Radio, WDVR. We're talking about reasonable accommodations for housing. Don't go anywhere.
DV Radio.
Shooters Express is Charlotte's number one destination for all personal defense, sport, instruction, and recreational shooting supplies. They offer concealed carry classes for only $29.95. That's only $29.95 for concealed carry classes. And if you're military or law enforcement, you'll receive great deals and be eligible for even more at Shooters Express. So head over to Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina, or visit shootersexpress.com for more information and monthly deals. That's Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina.
This is not a paid endorsement from Shooters Express and is provided solely by DV Radio for your charge.
What's DV Radio?
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DVRadio now. That's patreon.com/DVRadio.
DV Radio.
Are you looking for veteran resources and peer support? Objective Zero has an app for that. Download the Objective Zero app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Access wellness resources like yoga and a free year subscription to Headspace, the world's most popular meditation app. Check out veterans resources and access our nationwide network of peer support. Speak to fellow women veterans or someone in your field and branch of service. You get to choose who you want to chat with. Learn more at www.objectivezero.org. That's www.objectivezero.org.
We're back on the air. DV Radio.
Welcome back to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Gav.
We're here with Nia Pinheiro, both service dog handler and a landlord, and we're talking about reasonable accommodations for housing. Nia, you brought up a point during the break that I think it's very, very important for the audience to hear, and that is when you first started working with and training your service dog, and then you took a year off from work so that you could focus on training your service dog. And when you came back, you ran into a resident with an emotional support animal, and the light came on for you. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So I worked from home for a year to train Luna. And so when I came back, my residents, I'm very active in my community, so my residents would see me and Luna out and about. And she's like a 15-year resident. She's been there forever. She's probably going to die there. Really good resident of mine. She came up to me and she says, "Hey, Nia, my service dog does not behave the way your service dog does." Now, mind you, I'm the one who approved her accommodation 3 or 4 years prior to that. And I was like, "Well, that's because you don't have a service dog. You have an emotional support animal." And in that moment, she goes, "But my doctor wrote you that letter all those years ago, and they said I have a service dog. That letter says I have a service dog." And it's in that moment that I realized, wow, there's doctors writing letters, right? Mm-hmm. A trusted relationship. And they're coming to their landlord, another trusted relationship, giving them this letter. And neither one of those parties ever bothered to say, "Yes, you are protected, but you have responsibilities in this show too."
Uh-huh.
And when I sat with her and I pulled up the ADA and the FHA and I just proceeded to spend 2 hours with her, just educating her, answering her questions, and she looked at me, she goes, "Wow, Nia, I've been taking my dog to Walmart with me all these years thinking that I had a service dog, and now I realize I don't."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, you know, we talked about it and I explained to her how to go from having her ESA, she was moderately well behaved. She probably could pass as a service dog if you didn't know. But the look on her face was so shocked that, "What do you mean I don't have a service dog? My doctor said I do." And it was in that moment that I realized it took me back a little bit. And I was like, wow, so I can't assume that everybody who's out there is operating on a fraudulent tip, right? or that they're maliciously out there being, you know, fraudulent and using their protections. In the 3.5 years that I've been disabled and in my communities, I found that 80% is actually people that fall under that category. Doctor wrote the letter, landlord accepted the letter, everybody's thumbs up, and they just walk away thinking, I have a service dog. And so what we do is we give them a flyer. Mm-hmm. I hand out flyers to people that have, it's like a chart, and it says, these are your responsibilities if you are disabled and using an animal as medical equipment. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you have public access, you have flying, which also has emotional support animals, and you have the Fair Housing Act, which has emotional support animals. In those two areas, that those animals are allowed, but not in public, because emotional support animals are not task trained. And that's confusing when you're getting these letters and talking to these people. Nobody bothered telling you that, oh, by the way, that's not a service animal. That's not what makes it a service animal.
Right. Now, yeah. Now let's talk about those letters, and let's talk about what it is legal for a landlord to request when a when somebody is requesting a reasonable accommodation. What can the landlord ask for legally?
Well, the landlord is only owed confirmation of disability and connecting that disability to the need of the animal. Mm-hmm. And the reason I word it that way is because that can come in many, many forms, okay? Traditionally, it's a letter. It's a letter from a doctor or a social worker or some sort of medical professional. That's the most common. Mm-hmm. However, that is not the only way somebody can confirm disability.
Well, okay? Let's break it down a little bit, though, because I want to talk about the letter.
Okay.
And here's why. I asked my social worker to write a letter of accommodation, mm-hmm. and in it, they divulged my disability.
Absolutely bad.
Yes. So what should the letter say? I mean, and let me tell you what I think the letter should say. You tell me if that's what you're looking for as a landlord.
Okay.
I think the letter should say, Joaquin Watai is my patient and does have disabilities that are recognized in the DSM-5. The DSM-5 is the diagnostic manual that lists medical and psychological conditions and labels them as whether or not they're disabilities. Okay, so Joaquin Watai does have a disability identified in the DSM-5. Mr. Watai chooses to use a service dog trained to perform work or tasks that assist with his disability. Period. That's all the letter needs to say.
Oh, mine's way shorter than yours, my friend.
Okay, what's your say?
The letter only needs to state my patient, Urania Pinero, mm-hmm. is disabled as defined in the Fair Housing Act. Mm-hmm. You can even write that out.
Yeah.
And her animal is necessary for her disability. That's it.
So bottom line, letter says, this person is disabled, this person uses a service animal.
Yes. And the reason I don't recommend... Look, guys, landlord's not going to protect your medical record. Actually, they shouldn't be asking for anything. Even the DSM in there, already you're divulging. Okay, well, now there's an umbrella. Uh-huh. They're not owed any of that. They're just owed. They only need enough to know that a disability exists and they need the animal so that landlord knows what protections that resident is entitled to.
Okay.
Right? So they don't need, do not disclose any kind of diagnosis, because having a diagnosis does not make you disabled, and being disabled doesn't mean you have a diagnosis. So it's really irrelevant, and it's quite frankly nobody's business. Mm-hmm. Don't put symptoms. Don't put what the dog does. Now, the only exception to that I would recommend is if you're dealing with multiple covered animals, okay? Mm-hmm. As you know, in the ADA, to have two service dogs in public, they each need to perform a different task or different job function, okay?
Right.
So if you think of an ESA, they do one thing, their companion, they provide comfort. That's it.
Yep.
So you, technically two, they don't have to approve that second one. A lot of them do, but they don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I have three. I have Luna, who's my public access dog. She's the one that goes to work with me. I have Chili, who works mostly at home, okay, doing totally different work, and to give Luna a break because I work long days sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then I have a cat who's my emotional support per machine. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you do have multiples, make sure that those multiples have different functions. And in those letters, the only third piece of information that I would add on there is that information. So my letter has Nia's disabled as per FHA and ADA. She needs her animals. Mm-hmm. A, Luna, public service animal. B, Chili, at-home service dog. And I list, you know, their functions. And then C, Bones, ESA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's so that the landlord can see why you may need multiple animals. But other than that, I would not add anything else.
Okay.
That's it. Just those kind of few things.
So the letter is the traditional way of providing the proof of disability. What are some other ways that are acceptable?
The letter's the main one. It's usually the source of who's writing the letter that could be. This one's hotly debated in the landlord community, especially if you're using if your landlord uses products and services like pet screening.
Uh-huh.
But anybody that ADA and the FHA is very clear that is anybody who is intimately knowledgeable about the disability. So it does not have to be a doctor. Now, I'm going to caution everybody that if you're don't have access to medical care, for example, a lot of people don't. And you're going to a landlord and you can't get a letter, you're better off getting somebody who's intimately knowledgeable about your disability to write your letter. And I'm going to give you some examples to illustrate what I mean by that. There's a lawsuit that an HOA lost, okay? And the reason they lost is this lady was disabled and she couldn't walk down to the, you know, I don't know in your states or cities, but they have these big boxes with all your mailboxes on them.
Yeah.
Right? You got to walk to that cluster.
Right.
Well, this little old lady couldn't walk to her mailbox and she applied to her HOA to have them move her mailbox to her front lawn and the mm-hmm. HOA denied her.
Mm-hmm.
So the mailman who personally, rather than putting her, because he knew she was disabled, he watched her. She talked to him. He modified his work day from putting her mail in the cluster and personally would deliver it to her. He wrote her letter of accommodation for mm-hmm. her because he had intimate knowledge of her disability and how it affected that one major life thing, one of many, I'm sure.
Right.
So it doesn't have to be a doctor. But if you're not using a medical professional of some sort, be aware that not everybody's going to understand that. You may get pushback. And you may have to explain to whoever you're working with why you're using a non-traditional source. But there's a lot of a mother who's at home with two disabled children
mm-hmm.
and receives benefits as a caregiver. She can write a letter for her children as well, because she has intimate knowledge of the disability. I would say that when you use non-traditional sources, expect that people are going to question that, but be aware that there's not a hard, fast line. Another example that one of my admins just worked with, one of our members, was her letter was 3 years old, okay? Mm. And the landlord would not accept it. But because of her specific circumstances, she has been disabled many decades. Her disability is not going to change. She can't afford to see a doctor. She's in a very rural area. And Sarah won that through a HUD complaint, and the landlord had to take the three-year-old letter. So, but again, that's because there was no other way for her to request that accommodation.
Right.
So your landlord must take each request individually. They cannot put a hard, fast rule on all the accommodation requests.
Mm-hmm.
They have to look at each person individually, and I have tons of stories I could tell you where I've had to accept non-traditional sources because that specific person's need and their circumstance, that was the best way we could confirm a disability, and they have to accept it.
Okay.
That might drive some people crazy, I know, but yeah,
it kind of muddies the waters, but basically the impetus is on the landlord not to be a jerk.
And the handlers too.
It's meant to
be a conversation. I think, and like I said, it's trained in a CYA, and I do see a little bit of change in the industry, but it's like everybody's guards go up. Handlers, we go in, oh my God. Landlords are like, oh shit. You know, even my family, even with me in the mix and educating them, there's still a little bit of discomfort. People just have a difficult time dealing with disabled people, I think, sometimes.
Well, and nobody wants to get sued.
Right.
Because it ties up everybody's time and money. And, you know, the whole time that you're being sued over that apartment's not making you any money.
Yeah. So it's meant to be a conversation. I would always just say to handlers, look, if you're getting pushback and you reasonably talk to that person and they're not getting it, reach out to an advocate. Mm-hmm. If the advocate's not successful and you really want that landlord, reach out to HUD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I always say too, if people are being that, if they're not understanding and wanting to have a conversation about your needs, may want to think about whether or not you want to stay there. Now, people can be limited, right?
Yeah.
Some people have no choice in where they're going to live, but try to make it a conversation. Because most people don't want to be assholes to people.
Yeah.
In general.
But there, you know what? There are some landlords who just are.
They are.
Yep.
They
are. I mean,
it's a hard job.
Yeah. I can tell you one of my admins just had a big deal where he owned the prefabricated house, double wide. But they were renting property, renting a lot in a park, and the property managers were trying to tell him that he couldn't train his dog in his yard. Even though he's renting property, he's renting the yard. They tried to tell him he could. They took him to court. He won every time. They took him to court three times. Said he couldn't. He had a closed deck, with a closed gate on it. And the dogs would want to lay out in the sun. And they tried to tell him he couldn't let the dogs lay out in the sun on the deck that was closed, and that they would not jump. Although it was possible for them to jump, they would not jump. And then they tried to nail him because he would walk from the front door to his truck and get his service dog into the truck off leash. I do that all the time. And so they tried to tell him he was breaking leash laws. And the judge threw it out all three times, but it cost him, you know. And ultimately it ended up being, by the third time, the judge was, if you come in one more time, I'm going to slap you with harassment.
Yeah. Because
at that point it was. I mean, these people were being dicks.
Wow.
And that's, unfortunately, and all three of these are reasonable. You can look at it reasonably and go, no, that's bullshit. You know, unfortunately, we hear more often the bad stories about landlords, I think.
We do. Which
brings me to my last question, and I know it's the last question because I know you've got a lot to say about it. Those owners, those handlers, have responsibilities as renters.
They do.
Under the law. Let's talk about that.
So a resident's responsibility in terms of their service animals and their emotional support animals is that they do need to behave. They can't bark excessively. So just to kind of put this in context, the Fair Housing Act, it's to equalize opportunity. So is the ADA. Mm-hmm. It's not to give extra privileges. It's not to give special treatment. It's meant to equalize disabled persons' opportunities in that community. So although we, you know, the waiver of fees, waiver of restrictions and things like that is part of that, what's not part of that is any other laws and regulations, such as, you know, your vaccinate, your rabies, for example. You must pick up poop. Even if you're disabled, you're still responsible for picking up poop. If your service dog or your emotional support animal is excessively barking and disturbing the community or shows aggression, or attacks.
Wait a minute. We're disabled. We're special. We don't have to do any of this stuff.
Wrong.
That is correct. Now, yeah. I don't find, I personally, most of my residents with both pets and ESAs, I haven't had too much of that kind of drama, but I have had, I've helped members or members come to me and say, they're going to evict me. They can evict me. They can evict me because I have a service dog. Yeah, they can. Yeah. I actually had to, I had the misfortune once of having to ask one of my residents to remove his emotional support animal because right in front of my eyes, she broke his arm. Literally, he's this old Vietnam vet. He probably weighed 25 cents soaking wet, like a strong wind could knock him over. And he has this gigantic bully breed, beautiful dog, but she was dog aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking by with Luna and she literally snapped his arm. And I told him, hey, let's go ahead and get Shadow in the house. And then I'm going to have to give you a 10 day. And he, you know, he raised holy hell with me. You can't do that. That's my protected animal. And yeah, but you cannot control the animal, and the animal, had she gotten free, would have hurt me or somebody else. And we have other incidences. That wasn't the only one. But yes, they can be removed. So be aware, you're in a, especially if you're an apartment community, there are people that live around you. People have different schedules for working and school and whatever. People around you have disabilities as well. So your dog should be behaving properly, not excessively out of control. I don't recommend off leash unless you absolutely need it, of course, for your needs, but, off leash, you know, for other people may complain, just be aware of it and just explain yourself if it ever comes up. But other than that, you do have a responsibility to be, a good citizen in your community with your animals.
And also if your animal does do damage, whether it's digging up the azaleas or tearing holes in the walls, you're financially responsible for that, whether it's a service dog or an ESA or not.
That is correct. It's just damages. You know, everybody who damages property in a rental is probably going to get a bill for it.
Yeah. But I want to make sure that it's clear you're not protected against damages. If your dog does damage, you're responsible whether it's a service dog or not.
Yes. And just to kind of, you know, put a point on that, I have residents who have very large wheelchairs that just wreck my drywall, wreck the carpet, and they get a bill too. So it's just any damages, whether you have a service dog or not, is you're probably going to get a bill. But just because you are disabled and protected doesn't absolve you from that responsibility. That's a good point.
Okay, one final question. And this is for clarification for the audience. The Fair Housing Act protects the right of what kind of people to have an emotional support animal in their housing?
Disabled people.
So just because you love Floofy and you have to take Floofy with you, which I agree with, I've never left a dog behind. I've always taken my dogs with me. However, if you are not disabled, you do not have the protection of the Fair Housing Act, because just like the Americans with Disabilities Act, if you are not disabled, it doesn't matter how well behaved and how well trained that dog is, it's not a service dog. And if you are not disabled, it doesn't matter how much you love Floofy, it's not an emotional support animal. These are correct. Protections for equal accessibility for people with disabilities. And it is being abused because, well, I can go online and pay, you know, $65 and get an ESA letter. And so people are abusing the protection of equal access for disabled people.
Yes. And in essence, that's really prevalent because our hands are tied, right? We can't ask to, remember, I'm only entitled to confirm a disability in the dog. Yeah. I can't throw extra hoops at you to find that information. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And by the way, the HUD, the Housing and Urban HUD.
Urban Development.
Thank you. It's getting late. HUD is currently reviewing and investigating those websites, although I don't have a whole lot of...
Right. Secretary Carson asked that it be reviewed by the Justice Department because of the unbelievable amount of misinformation those websites are providing.
You know what, though? And this is the kicker, okay, if we're going to talk about those really quick. If you read the fine print of those letters, it does state you must have medical record of. They're very clever, but they're very misleading. They're taking advantage of people's
insurance.
They're taking Life advantage. I have one. I have a registry thing for Luna. As a landlord, I was like, when I start getting piles of these, I'm like, how easy are these to get? And I got one.
It was pretty darn simple. Yeah.
Yeah. So they are. Those are being looked at by HUD, and I don't know, there hasn't been any word on that yet, but I'm really hoping that they shut them down. I think doctors, the medical field needs to be kind of like landlords. They need to have workshops and more education, because that's kind of where the ESA... They're the ones that need the letters, right?
Yep. You don't need a letter for a service animal.
You don't. You need them for housing, but that's kind of where it comes from. So I hope they get rid of those registry websites or regulate them in a way that diminishes the inaccuracy.
Real quick, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've read it correctly. The same rule applies for the FHA that applies for the ADA when it is not readily apparent that the person is disabled and that the dog assists with their disability. For example, if you have somebody come in a wheelchair whose dog is obviously trained to retrieve items and open doors and things, you can't even ask, right?
Nope. And here's another thing. If you get like Social Security disability, you got that letter that says disability on it. Guess what? You don't have to show.
Doctor's letter.
Well, you've confirmed you have the disability. Okay.
Right.
Now, if it's not readily apparent, they should just let it go. If you have the letter, like if I have somebody come in and they qualified to rent my apartment on a disability letter, and then they say, "Hey, I have an emotional support animal," I'm like, "Welcome to my community. What can I do to help you?" Because at that point, I already know they're disabled. And why would I make them go get a letter to tell me they need the animal? Okay, but they can't.
What I'm hearing about this is I think the same thing that we came to, the same conclusion we came to about employment and requesting reasonable accommodations. What I'm hearing is if you are willing to open a channel of communication with the landlord, with the rental agency, and communicate, and the landlord's willing to communicate, nobody should have any issues, because you're communicating. You're saying, "Hey, I have a disability. I use a service animal, or I have an ESA," and the landlord is going to say, "Well, it's obvious you're disabled, or I need a letter." They provide a letter. And as long as everybody's openly communicating with each other, there shouldn't be any issues.
No. And you know what? I'm a personal believer that it's not always so much what you're saying, it's how you're saying it.
Mm-hmm.
So, have respectful communication with somebody.
Yep.
who may be ignorant. We all have, I always say we all have a day one, right? Nobody walked into this show being aware of all these ins and outs. Your landlords right. are comprised of a group of people. Yeah. And your landlord's actually probably like five layers up in some of the larger communities. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with leasing agents who are probably the least prepared to deal with the handlers, by the way. So those people that are trying to lease you that apartment are probably the least educated or and less least trained on how to interact with us as disabled handlers. So think about how you're saying it. Now, you know, we're in a psychological disabled world for us, mm-hmm. and communication is affected. Walk away, call them back. Do, you know, just keep it respectful. If they lose their shit, that's a reflection of them.
Right.
But keep that communication respectful. If you can't educate, because not everybody can, reach out to your friends, your community members to help educate that landlord or that store owner, because you will be amazed how grateful 80% of the people who start combatively with you about this, it's because they're frustrated because the dog pissed on their, you know, or bit their, you know, whatever. They have negative experiences.
Right.
But yeah, keep the communication open. Keep it respectful. You're not alone in this fight. Reach out to people who can help voice the issues or educate for you. And it really 80% of the time works beautifully.
Yeah.
The other 20, you know, life's not perfect.
Okay, real quick. What landlords are exempt from the Fair Housing Act?
Okay, so if they have less than 4 units, they are not they're not obligated to follow fair housing.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other exceptions? There's so few.
If the landlord lives on the property, like if it's if they're renting the mother-in-law apartment out back.
Correct. So if you're, and I think it's like 7 bedrooms or less, if you're renting rooms out of your house, like let's mm-hmm. say an Airbnb, for example. If they have 7 bedrooms or less.
Airbnb is not exempt because they are, in effect, a hotel. I learned that by renting an Airbnb and having pushback, and I called Airbnb, and they said, oh, no, we're not exempt from the ADA. Airbnb specifically falls under the ADA, not the FHA in that regard.
Correct. And that was probably a bad example. But the amount, I think it's 7.
Like a boarding house.
Yeah.
A boarding house.
Yeah, like a boarding house. So if the owner of the house lives there and they have, don't quote me, I don't remember the exact number, but they have to have a larger number of bedrooms
mm-hmm.
Before they're required to do it. And then there's very few. There's also very few reasons for denial, by the way. Like I know the most popular one is insurance, you can request proof that insurance is the reason, and it has to be, the word is called burden.
Mm-hmm.
Burden, that's a pretty heavy word. It can't be like, oh, my insurance went up $100 a month and you're a 500 unit property.
A burden. Yeah.
So, but they're very few. If they advertise, they're FHA beholden. If they're managed by a broker, they have to follow FHA.
If they use a property management agency,
right?
They follow if they only have 3 units. If they're using a property manager, they fall under the FHA.
Correct. Yes. A property management company has to have what's called a broker, and then they fall under real estate laws, and that requires that they be FHA compliant. Yes. So
yeah.
So very few are going to be exempt. So if you're like Craigslisting it and you're renting a private owner's home, because you know there's people that dabble in it, or they're coming through rough times and they're just going to rent out their home, ask them, are you, you know, how many units do you rent out, or are you represented by a broker? Because those smaller landlords or that one-off, they may not be required to allow you to have your dog. Oh, and by the way, HOAs do fall under FHA as well.
The HOA cannot tell you that you can't have an Alaskan Malamute.
That is correct.
Yeah. Stuck on that, you asshole. I'm not a fan of HOAs.
Yeah, no, and they've been notoriously nasty to the service dog community, and they...
Oh, they're just notoriously nasty all the way around.
Why people would voluntarily join an HOA is beyond me.
I have one of my rentals is in an HOA, and it's, or used to be, actually, we sold that one out of our portfolio because it was such a pain in the,
Yeah.
HOAs definitely fall under fair housing as well. They cannot.
That's awesome. If you take nothing else away from this, remember that HOAs fall under the Fair Housing Act, and they cannot tell you how to handle your service dog.
So get a big-ass dog.
Get that St. Bernard. But make sure you train it.
Well, I have Dobermans. My homeowner's insurance comes and inspects my house personally every year because I have Dobermans, even though they're service dogs. But just certain breeds.
That's insurance. I mean, you know, the Alaskan Malamutes have been on the top 10 of list of baddies for insurance companies for a long time. And you know what the reason is? It's not because they're dangerous dogs. It's because when they get bored, they find ways to amuse themselves.
Yes. Like
eating the siding off of the house. That's not Skeeter, but it's happened. So insurance companies don't like Malamutes because people get them and they don't realize that if you don't train that dog and that dog doesn't have a job, you've got just like Belgian Malinois or Dutch Shepherd, you got your hands full. Yep. Dog needs to be gainfully employed. Nia, thank you so much for joining us. We may in the future be doing some more reasonable accommodation programs because we have missed one subject in this three-part series so far.
Uh-oh. And
that's air travel. There's a reason why we've missed air travel. There's a big reason why. But folks, if you need to hear about how to, you know, go about doing the air travel thing, let us know on the Service Dog Show page, or you can message Scav at Scav and Scout Chronicles. You can message me at PTS Dog. Let us know that, hey, we really would benefit from hearing an episode about air travel with your service animal. And we'll do it. The biggest, most visible, most controversial area, in my opinion, of reasonable accommodation is air travel. Housing, yes, it's controversial, but it's not as bad as air travel because it's not in the news.
Right.
Air travel, however, we see regularly, and it's bad when we see it in the news.
There's a reason I drive everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Even if I have to go back across the country from the East Coast to the West Coast to visit my family, I'll either drive or take a train because guess what? Flying is not in the books for me. I hate flying anyway, but try it with a 100-pound Malamute on your feet.
I did it with Luna in July.
Yeah.
Very proud of myself and my doggo for doing it, but it is it is a very challenging, and it's gotten worse since then because now with all the bans in place, and even though they're not supposed to, so that's a dumpster fire for sure.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. The air travel, look, honestly, I will probably go straight to the FAA and ask for a representative of the FAA to discuss air travel on the show if we decide to go that route, because as much misinformation as we've seen about housing and about employment, God, it's worse when you start talking about air travel. Holy crap. Well,
you have the ACE, because you have the ACE, the Air Carriers Act, and then you have each airline piggybacking on top of that.
Yep.
Their own regulations, and they're like a discrimination smorgasbord free-for-all now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't want your pit bull or bully breed.
Roxy,
or
the PTSD service dog, who is an American Staffordshire Terrier, who won last year's America's Humane Service Dog of the Year, can't fly on Delta.
Right.
Crazy.
The service dog of the year for the entire country can't fly on Delta Airlines because of assumptions made about her breed. That's some bullshit.
And she's better than any toy poodle out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Roxy's awesome.
I know you and I, JJ, have talked about my opinion about a hurling tube and untrained dogs in a hurling tube in the air.
Oh, yeah. And so, that's what it is. Look, these people that take dogs that aren't trained, that are not, I mean, that are not really service dogs, and although they may be an emotional support animal, they're not prepared to be there. And you're taking that animal and you're putting it into an unfamiliar situation, in a crowded situation, physically uncomfortable, temperature-wise, crowded-wise, and then you're taking them and moving them up to 25 or 30,000 pounds. So the air pressure is completely different than anything they've ever felt. And then you're adding the noise and the smells and turbulence and crowdedness and strangers and stress. I snap in an airplane.
I
don't blame the dog.
Right. Well, you know? And here's the thing. I am totally anti-regulation. I'm like, educate, don't regulate.
Yep,
that's my little motto, right?
Yeah.
Except when it comes to the hurling tube at 25,000 miles. I spent 5 months in order for me to be comfortable that Luna can handle everything you just described. I could not imagine just going in there with nothing. And the normal remedies, right? The normal remedies available to people in public when dogs are not behaving are not available.
Yeah, you can't take your dog outside at 23,000 feet.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and go down and, you know, like, yeah. It's just different. So, yeah, I think that's a whole show right there, JJ.
Oh, that's more than one show, and that's a rough
like a series.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Service Dog Show. Don't forget, this is not the only program on DV Radio. One I personally like to listen to, mainly because it features my girlfriend, is Frag Out Drag Out Friday evenings at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Nevermore, DV Midnight Frosty and DV Oink. They have a fun time taking stuff that's going on in the news or in the veteran community and making merciless fun of it. Check out Frag Out Drag Out right here on DV Radio, WDVR, Friday evenings at 9:30 p.m. This is the Service Dog Show. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you again soon.
DV Radio.